When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Same order as last time. Liz 1, Tyler 2, Johnny 3. 1.
2.
3.
3.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Johnny, for...
I swear you said Johnny 3.
Yeah, I did, and I was wrong to have said that. Let's try this again.
I was like, what do I say? What am I?
Tyler 3, Johnny 4.
Don't you come for my spot, Omara.
he did what I said, but what I said was incorrect.
I'm an actor, but read the words on the page.
It's one of those situations where everybody is right but me. Well, it changed the order of people's appearances for me. So I'm going to say 1. Tyler, you'll say 2. Johnny, you'll say 3. And Liz will say 4. We'll go to 8.
Are you sure I'll say 3 this time?
Hey, this time, Johnny, this time you get to say 3. 1.
2.
3.
4.
Okay. Jinx. I should have said 5. I'm sorry.
Oh, you're killing it, man. You're killing it.
I'm out of it.
It's all good.
So, who wants to start? Who should I check in with first?
Johnny.
All right, baby, we're going to do it. So, we return to Upper Nordia, where, Johnny, you are currently under the effects of the Underswell, a curse that mariners can cast that makes it feel as though you are walking through waist-deep water. You just run much more slowly, and it's very difficult to do anything. Your reaction to this, because you were sort of caught by this spell in a very tough spot, you decided to vault yourself over the side of the wall and connect with Margaret, who was currently being menaced by a group of about 5 mariners. You fell down on top of one of these mariners, and I think, like, you and Margaret are on one side. Technically, there are more mariners on the other side of you, but these ones know about you. So you come down and hit one of these mariners heavily as they were beginning to advance towards Margaret. Margaret sees this happen and, I think, dashes forward to pull you up to your feet. Jonnet!
My legs aren't working the way that they normally do. I'm slow. Also, look out! And so... Jonnet is going to do some earth magic, and I'm going to spend some strain.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
And is Travis below us in terms of the staircase?
Yes, Travis is significantly below you in terms of the staircase.
All right, well then I apologize to Travis, because Jonnet is going to take a 4-foot stretch right past Margaret, and he's going to just like... remove the stair from it and just make it an incline for the mariners to fall down.
Ooh, okay. All right. I think this is going to be a hard check, but it will provide a significant tactical advantage.
Okay. Let's see. Pull this up. Oh. Oh. I don't know how to feel about this. Okay, so that is two failures and one triumph.
Damn. Okay.
That feels just like John causes a mudslide.
Yeah, I kind of think that is what happens. But it's got to be a beneficial sort of mudslide, because like the danger here is you also have members of the Uhuru crew kind of on Gable's level that are making a stand, or what stand they can, against the flow of mariners who are moving up these stairs. Until very recently, most of the mariners were just trying to bypass Uhuru pirates as they could so that they could establish numbers in Nordia. But once, like, I think that strategy was introduced by Ahab and managed by Ahab. Now that Ahab is down, I don't think they have that guidance, really. So Gable's in the middle of a fight. So if you do cause a mudslide, it is going to threaten Gable and all of the pirates that are with Gable, which, to me, like, the consequences of a failure on trying to do something like this implies that the stairs don't work. And I would want a triumph to actually tip the battle in your favor in some way. So I'm trying to thread that needle.
My pitch would be, like, instead of making the stairs maybe around myself or Jonathan and Margaret sort of cave and become just inclines, maybe for some reason this floor beneath both of us like shoots us up to the top of the hill.
Oh, that's kind of neat. Yeah. So Jonnet strikes a dynamic pose, because these mariners are encroaching. Y'all are kind of like down. It's not really an alley, but like you're on a wall on one of the levels of Nordia, and you can kind of look out over the procession of mariners that are moving up the staircase of Nordia. You might, if you were paying very close attention, be able to spot the fire on Gable's sword. And coming from the other side, there is this group of like four mariners, a fifth one that has been knocked down, that are kind of encroaching on you. And on the other side, it sort of leads into this major staircase. And so Jonnet, while he's knocked someone down and Margaret has pulled him away, you are still facing down this critical threat in front of you right now. But Jonnet, kind of being the benevolent person that he is not really thinking of protecting himself as much as he's thinking of what needs to be done to protect the people around me. And so he's focused part of his attention on this staircase that has this procession of mariners. Like, I think the first couple mariners that managed to bypass Gable and the defenses that the other Uhuru pirates have set up on the lower stairs are just starting to sort of come up and join the forces that La Llorona is running to intercept the civilians that are being ferried out of the town square right now. So you turn to that staircase and you try and focus your magic on it, but at the same time, you are being threatened by these other mariners. So I think partway through the spell, like, Jonnet sort of puts a defensive arm out in front of himself and then crouches himself to the ground to slap the cobblestones beneath him and create a connection between the magical tendrils in his body and the earth beneath him. And he's planning on doing the fine work of smoothing down those stairs to make an ascent more difficult for the people advancing on Nordia. But as he's doing that, a mariner like comes up with its sword out, moving so quickly, dashes towards Jonnet and Margaret. So at the very last second, Jonnet shifts his focus and just pulls the wall of the building next to him out and smashes them, crushing them underneath this wall, putting up a barrier between Jonnet, Margaret, and the mariners who were advancing on them.
And then this happens. Jonnet looks back to Margaret. Can you give me a piggyback ride?
Margaret,
yes or no?
Despite the tense situation, you say that. It takes like Margaret a second to really think through what you have just asked. And she grabs Jonnet by the shoulder and swings his arm around her hip and kind of glides with you, almost like a dance, like maybe in a dance an adult would do with a kid at a wedding, but
like I'm on her toes.
Yeah, but you can also see and kind of feel that as Margaret is moving in this way and moving with you, because your eye is open right now and you're sort of taking in the magic of the universe around you, you can see that she is guiding you between the path waves and currents of this curse, that she is maneuvering you around it so that you can move freely. So some of her magic is going into this moment. We have to get you out of here and to the ship. And Travis is in.
You have to come with me. You don't just think about yourself.
Travis is stuck in the lower portions of the city. We have to wait for him or create a path.
Okay, I can help with that.
And Margaret says that, and as she says that, you round the corner together, and you can see La Llorona standing at the top of this staircase. At the point it intersects with the thoroughfare from the main square area of town that connects it to the skyship port, you can see her facing off against Toku, and horrifically, the people around them moving slowly as though they are affected by the same curse as Jonnet. And you can see the moment that I described, I think sometime in the last episode, that one of the mariners has stabbed one of the civilians in the hand with a dagger. And
that's right.
That has affected them with a mariner's mark. So they are currently bolstering the size of their forces. Now, to add to this little bit of tension, I think we are going to cut to the deck of Il Sanguidio. Right now, I think Nodos is kind of looking out, trying to spot the positions of their opponents. And so we see through the hazy, dim look of this spyglass that Nodos is looking through, that has droplets of water in the way and you know, is appearing into gray mist. We can see the eerie ghost lights of the mariner's ships, the larger ships from his fleet, which are sitting beyond the land barrier of the cove. And looking through these, we can see something dark rising behind them. And slowly we realize as it gets closer, it is a massive wave. And this almost tidal wave that is washing closer looks as though it is going to swallow up these ships in entirety. It crashes over them, enveloping them, and washes into the bay. But as Nodos like calls out to the people around him, "Tidal wave! Tidal wave!" We can see it envelop the ghost lights on those ships, wash over the cove, and spill out onto the beaches a little bit. We can see after it is done washing that emerging from underneath that inky black wave are the larger mariner ships. They have been washed into the bay by a wave. As they come out from underneath that water, they begin to fire. They fire a volley at Il Sanguidio. They fire a volley at Upper Nordia. And a volley at the skyship dock, where the Uhuru rests. So, I am going to make some rolls here. One roll is for three advantages, but no successes, which is good. One roll is going to be a failure and a threat. And one roll is going to be two successes and two threats. So,
okay,
here's where we're at. You have those three results. So somewhere you're going to take damage and people are going to get hurt. One place you are going to be shot at, but actually end up ahead somehow. And another area you're going to be shot at and it's going to cause you some difficulty. So between the targets of the skyship, the Uhuru, which is docked, Il Sanguidio, which is in the sky, and Upper Nordia itself, where do you want to assign those? Where are you interested in being challenged?
My vote would be keep the ship safe and then we could figure out the...
That was exactly what I was thinking. Have it be awash with the Uhuru with like some disadvantages and then have the Il Sanguidio come out better for it, because that's technically could be to our advantage.
I think that makes the most sense. I think because... Here's what happened. Because Nodos shouted out tidal wave to the crew, I feel like that information gets back to Slam, who is still, I guess, at the helm of this ship. And Slam just decides to turn the ship. He's got no real reasoning to do this. He's like, yeah, exactly. It's a ship in the sky. The wave is going to be so far beneath them. But he turns, and I think he's actually positioned the broadsides of Il Sanguidio towards the oncoming danger. So when they get to act next, they will have two blue dice.
Two blue dice? Wow, wow, wow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's, I mean, there were three three threats to the Mariner's forces rolled off that. So I feel like that's appropriate.
That pool is pretty good.
We then turn to the Uhuru itself. The ghost fire cannons, these like green, blue-green lights streak through the sky and explode on the docks in front of the Uhuru. And we can see in the illumination of these explosions beneath the tarp that is currently covering the Uhuru, we can see the collection of townsfolk from Nordia and sky pirates who are working on the rest of the scrape. We can see people with these barrels of alcohol, like just washing it on freshly scraped areas of ship, while everyone else is using chisels and sledgehammers to knock off the thick shell of Skamalic that is covering the hull. We can see that on the lower part of the hull, it appears to be really the only places left where Skamalic is present. The rest of the ship, especially around the rudder and guide sails, it appears to have been cleared away. And I think we can actually see Uhuru pirates are currently restringing fresh rope into the pulleys that are attached to the guide sail and rudder. So we're almost ready to launch there. But I think some errant ghost light actually lands onto the tarp that is covering the Uhuru, and it catches fire. It catches fire with this ghost light, and you'd think that, it's very strange to have a fire affect something that its whole job is to be wet, but that is the danger of ghost light. It is the Mariner's fire. It can burn things that are even wet. There are shouts from people working on the Uhuru that there is a fire on the tarp, and if it is not dealt with swiftly and successfully, then it threatens to burn away all of the protection, which could really endanger any sort of long-term travel plans for the Uhuru, should you not be successful in this battle. as that happens, like we're kind of looking at this ghost light starting to lick its way across the tarp, and someone darkens the frame of our shot as we quickly turn to Upper Nordia, where boom, 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 cannonballs rain down on parts of the town that are now sitting up atop these hills and cliffs. Like I said, there are, you know, people who have just built homes that are kind of on stilts on the side of this sharp incline that's overlooking Upper Nordia, and it's sending some of these buildings just down into the town, like literal homes crashing down on businesses and other things that are in downtown Nordia. It was 3 damage that we were dealing with. Or three successes that we were dealing with on top of the damage of cannons. So I am now going to ask, how much of this do you want meted out to the citizens of Nordia, and how much of this is going to affect the Uhuru crew?
Oh.
I don't know. Well, also...
I vote crew.
Yeah, because we statistically, since we know everyone's hit points, no one is in the danger zone even yet. So
no one that you think you care about. So we can take this damage point by damage point. There's 13 damage on the table. which means 13 rolls on the Uhuru death chart.
That is a lot of
that's
rolls.
That's a lot of you work.
Yeah.
What if we split that? What if, like, all right.
You know what? I will roll on the death chart, and you can tell me when you'd like to split. That'll be a fun kind of mechanic.
Who's worth more? Who's worth a stranger's life? Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah. Ethics, baby. This is the train. This is the trolley problem.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
Okay. So the first roll was 63, which affects no one. So you're good.
Great.
Civilian. No.
The second roll is 50. Also doesn't threaten the crew.
Civilian. Uh-huh.
The third roll is 27. And it hits on the Uhuru death chart. And the person that goes out is Polly Shore.
What?
And
all 13 points.
Oh no. Even though he was in a bubble, he did get into trouble.
Johnny.
So just to remind people, this is Polly Shore spelled S-H-O-R-E. So it's like Polly Shore, but kind of a nautical pun.
Yes.
Isn't that how Polly Shore spells
his name? I'm pretty sure that's how Polly Shore spells his name.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so now I guess
ours is Polly Shore.
Yeah. So we see Uhuru pirate Polly Shore. What task has Polly been given that puts him in the line of danger when a literal house is sliding down a mountain onto him?
Wheezing the juice.
Okay. So he's not even really working to protect the civilians right now. Mm-hmm. He's kind of
so he kind of had it coming. Yeah.
Yeah. So is this modern day Polly Shore, do we think? Or
I think this is like 1986 Polly Shore.
Okay. Oh, height of his powers.
Okay. Height of his powers.
Yeah.
It's dark machinations.
Lots of bandanas on his wrists.
We see Goofy Movie Polly Shore out in piratical gear, drinking some bog wine and, you know, hitting some sort of pipe. We don't really know what sort of substances. Maybe it's just rope. Maybe he's just toking some rope. He's partying and then boom, crushing down on him. Polly Shore is now dead.
Oh, wow.
Well, didn't have points, I guess.
He had a 0 hit points, so that fool dies immediately. Pauly Shore, not a going concern. That was, I believe, our third roll. We have 10 left.
Oh, jeez.
Hey heroes, it's James, your game master, and welcome to the mid-roll. We are sailing into the second week of our Kickstarter for Skyjack's Call of the Sky, the first volume of the soundtrack to Campaign Skyjack's. Now, in our first week of the Kickstarter, our first day actually, you managed to blast past every stretch goal we could think of. So we had to take a while and think about some new ones. After we did, I posted our first update and said that the first new stretch goal would be at $25,000, and you managed to pass that one before the update even posted. So now, we've got a much longer list. Starting at $31,000, and every $1,000 after that, our resident bard, Arnie Parrott, will include chords for songs that appear on the album. If you manage to take us to $34,000, you'll get chords for Call of the Sky, Skyjack's, Lighthouse, and Way Hey Ho. Then, at $35,000, cast members, friends, and pop music devotees, Johnny O'Mara and John Patrick Cohen, will listen to the entire album and review it on an episode of their podcast, Bill Buds. I'm looking forward to knowing which ones they say are skips. We do have more stretch goals to come, but that's all we're going to announce for now. Hopefully, you'll blow past these just as quickly, and we'll have to get even more creative. We'll announce what the $25,000 stretch goal was, along with details for the other stretch goals later today on an update for the Kickstarter. If you haven't already, please head over to Kickstarter and search for Skyjack's the album, or head to bit.ly/callofthesky.ks and back the project today. Thank you all so much for your support. Before we get back to the show this week, I want to take a moment and thank some of our backers on Patreon. First up, we've got a name correction, Nevi Fury. Thank you so much. As for everyone else, we are currently between lists here at the One Shot Network. So, if you want to hear your name on air, and you'd like to hear it sooner rather than later, please head to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and sign up to become a backer. Current backers at the $15 plus levels should look in their inbox, because our $15 backers have received instructions to claim their dice rewards, and our $25 plus backers have received instructions to collect their free t-shirts. Thanks so much to everyone who supports this network. We wouldn't be able to make programs like this without you. And a huge thanks to everyone who's going to support us in the future. Now, with all of that out of the way, let's get back in the sky. $84. That's okay.
Yeah.
$63. Also safe. $66. Very safe as well.
Let's keep it in those 60s. All right.
Mm-hmm. So that's to 6 now. 7 is 82. Y'all are getting very lucky with these rolls.
Yeah, I know.
No beloved characters are threatened. 69. Nice.
Nice.
I think that one counts for 2. We can agree that that one counts for 2.
Yes, nice.
So that brings us up to 8, I think, or 9.
There's no way to know.
There's no way to know. I'll be mean and say 8. 71. Okay, that's safe. So that's 9. 10 is 64. Y'all, these dice really like y'all. 11 is 3. Okay. Three is the big man, Wendell Barge.
Oh, no.
How?
So, well, This is one of the things that narratively all this means, all the Uhuru death chart means, is that someone on the Uhuru crew is getting threatened. And while it makes most narrative sense to deal with the threat of this cannon fire right now, there are all sorts of threats that can go on in this battle. So in the air, there was a moment where hearing tidal wave slam just decided to bank the ship, which opens the broadside of the ship to the enemy fleet. So they're in a good position to shoot, but it also means a pretty hard tack for the crew. And a lot of crew are, you know, at cannon stations and readying themselves. Like, we know Nodos is on lookout and we know that Slam is on helm. So to me, it makes sense that Wendell is the one who is right now at the furnace. And so a hard tack comes. Wendell is immediately in front of the furnace, shoveling some coal underneath this tarp. And there is an unexpected movement in the ship. And he has to reach his arm out to ground himself. And it is his zombified arm. And once again, it touches the heat of that furnace, which is truly, truly brutal. And he would be very badly burned. But Wendell, thanks to our friend Dref, has a zombie arm, and that is not going to be an injury that kills him. However, he does lose a hit point.
How many does he have?
I will reveal that Wendell has 4 left.
Okay, he's fine.
Okay.
It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine.
And the next... Oh, yes. Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Whoa. What? The next... that are you on, James?
Well, this is our 12th roll, I believe. And the next is number 13 on the list, Ryan Lochte.
Yes!
Oh!
Yes! Ruin him.
All right.
Bring me the flesh.
So Lochte is downhill in the middle of the woods.
He gets mugged for real.
He is currently leading this, what we found is kind of a pretty valiant effort to divert the forces of the Mariner's fleet away
Go
from
Gators.
The main battle. However, he kind of got drawn out into the open and he had to decide how he wanted to engage. And, you know, he had the decision that he could have gone to connect with Gable or continued in this pretty foolhardy effort. And he made the foolhardy choice. So I think what happened, that tidal wave hit the kind of murky area around the woods where Lochte and his crew were fighting. And so, like, the camera goes dark and chaotic as he's underneath the water, and eventually the sea recedes, and Lochte is disoriented. He did manage to keep hold of his sword, and there is a mariner immediately above him. The mariner swings a sword down. Lochte catches it with his own and makes some wild swings with his sword to get some distance, some space between himself and the mariner. He's unsteady on his legs. There is water everywhere. And now he's like kind of squaring off. And then through his chest from behind, the blade of another mariner pokes through. And I think... takes his wallet. And he is robbed for real. But also fucking dies. Ryan Lochte, no longer a member of the Uhuru crew. He was another character with 0 hit points and nothing to protect him from death.
He was really punching out of his weight class.
He really was.
Yeah, he really
was.
Had he been in the water, he would have survived.
That's true. It would have been, you know, kind of a silver medal survival, but like still survival.
I mean, the fact that he survived at all, like to be included is huge.
It's an honor just to be on the podium. It really
is. Us, truly.
thank God.
And we're doing the last roll. That is 47. That is safe for the Uhuru crew. Y'all managed to not lose your nerve at all during that tense, tense moment. You only lost two crew members. They were both crew members based on real people.
So now we can't get sued.
I don't know if like fictionally killing someone truly defends you from being sued, but you know, we'll leave that to philosophers and lawyers to discuss.
Listen to the podcast, right?
Yeah.
So we move on. There are a lot of things that we could immediately address. We've got Travis figuring out where he is. We've got Gable, who just wrapped up a fight on the staircase. And we've got Il Sanguidio in the air that kind of has a shot lined up.
I would love to resolve the boat because we've got this nice dice pool that I would like to take advantage of.
Yeah, let's do it. Liz, let's have you take the helm there.
Okay. So we've got three for each of the three named characters plus the two blue that you gave to me.
Yes.
So
for three named characters, you are rolling with three yellow.
Yes. So you said that in the bay, instead of the three small ships, we have two big ships now, or?
So in the bay, you had the two small ships. Now you have three big ships that have like kind of washed in with it.
Three big ships. So what is my difficulty?
Your difficulty is going to be, well, what are you trying to do? Where are you targeting?
The biggest ship.
You're going to target the biggest ship with a volley of cannon fire.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Then the difficulty for that, I think you're in prime position. It's an average check to hit with cannon fire from this high above.
Average is two?
Average is two. Two purple.
Oh, it's on the ground. Oh, God. A success and five advantages.
Hell wow. Yes.
Okay.
So I think, like, the Uhuru pirates that have boarded Il Sanguidio, you know, they were setting up these cannons to fire in rotation. And I think this is a complete volley that they have managed to line up. It rocks the ship violently with the explosion of cannons from like one half of the ship all firing at the same time. The heart bell rings out with, you know, a deep ring because it is a heart bell, but you know, it's also the fanciful silver heart bell that was on Il Sanguidio. So it is kind of a sweet and deep ring that mixes with the cannon fire, wind and rain sounding as there's a huge explosion of fire that lights up this silver gilded ship. And the cannonballs sail through the air down onto the decks of the largest ship in the Mariner's fleet. And I believe they strike the main mast of that ship and send it crashing down.
Yes.
We're also going to take damage against the Mariners. So I will take away from their resources here.
That's what happens when you send the beef boys.
Yeah.
Boys go to the beach.
So that deals 10 damage to these drowned sailors in just a brutal volley that has destroyed the main mast of this flagship. We can see chaos ensues on the deck as like that mast creaks and cracks and lines begin to strain and snap. It falls down onto the deck. There are mariners who are right now aiming cannons on that deck who are just crushed beneath it. And we can see stepping out from behind the helm in full relief for the first time, I'll look at the Mariner himself. The Mariner is gaunt and pale. There are pocked areas of his skin where it looks like perhaps there are barnacles growing beneath. He also has kind of a bluish green haze about him. He looks a little bit like the ghost light. It is not so much that he is bright and burning in the murky haze of the storm and darkness, but more unlike some of the other things in the ship, which might be concealed by the shade and shadow, the Mariner stands out in a way that is unignorable. But apart from those things, there's nothing really about the Mariner that is remarkable. The horror in his look is the same horror that you see in the rest of the drowned sailors around him. He just looks like a person that is not very well cared for and has been ravaged by the sea. But he looks out over the chaos of this ship and then silently turns his focus towards the shore. So with that, we can move on to the next thing to resolve. And I think it should be
Travis, I think.
Let's catch up with Travis. Travis, you are currently kind of blending into this crowd of sailors who are on their procession towards Nordia itself. Whatever partial transformation you've gone through, which I believe is causing you a good bit of pain right now.
Oh, yeah.
You are concealed for the time being. What do you do? What's your plan?
So I want to make my way to Gable.
Okay. So you're actually going to try and move up to Gable. Let's just make this a good old fashioned stealth check. I think it's average because you are well disguised right now.
Oh, well disguised, you say? Average is 2?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Oh, I think Papa gonna make this.
This should be something that Travis is very good at. So,
yeah, that's 3 successes.
Ooh, okay. Yes. I don't think the Mariners really give a second look to you. I mean, most of the people in this procession are not really thinking for themselves so much, or even, you know, it's hard to tell if they're thinking at all. It is kind of a slow droning procession of people marching forward, not like a marching army that is moving in unison. That they're all kind of like shambling and stumbling inexorably forward towards the stairs and up the steps. But I think as long as you don't do anything to stand out, you can easily make it over towards Gable. Which I think will bring us to Gable. Gable, you just struck down this big leader. I think there was a time where all of the sailors around him were like, it feels like they shorted out for a second. And suddenly your part of the battle took a sudden turn in your favor as the Uhuru pirates that were crossing swords with mariners as they were trying to push their way past, you know, suddenly made a lot of headway and cut down a lot of mariners very quickly. But slowly and surely, especially after the big crash of the wave against the beach, they've begun to move once more.
I'm just going to keep on attacking then. I don't think Gable has a whole wherewithal to stop. So.
Yeah, I don't think they do either. So, yeah, roll it up. Roll an attack. You've got no individual targets who are of any special note.
And to clarify, you said that you want me to be rolling with the Bladed Judgment or no?
Let's see. You should... At this point, I think when you're raging, unless we're in like very specific circumstances, you're probably using the Blade of Judgment. Okay. So roll with the stats around that.
Okay. And how many friends?
This is a melee check at this point. And, yes. And technically you're making a melee check against
all of them.
The crowd of mariners. So it's an average check.
But they haven't moved against me yet.
Not specifically. What ability are you
quick strike? I'm stacking.
I think, you know what, in this circumstance, I'll allow it because you did just sort of strike a blow that like shorted them out, as I said. So Okay. Yeah, they're like slowly rolling forward.
All right.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Your rolls are so good. I think you have like automatic successes and advantages baked in.
Yes, but also, okay. That's two triumphs and a success.
Wow. Holy shit. What?
Okay.
Yeah, that's what, yeah.
Double fuck. Gable.
Can Gable like just do the thing like in Star Wars where you throw your lightsaber and then it just comes back? Then can they Captain America their
just Mjolnir
swords?
The sword.
Yes.
Okay, I've got something that I could offer to you.
Yes.
What if, like, because I mean, two triumphs, those are two crits at least. So like, you're at least taking down two mariners there. The damage that you're doing with like two successes, the successes that you counted, are they also including the triumphs? Because the triumphs count as successes as well.
And no, so the it was two triumphs and one success. And
two triumphs and one success. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So what we could have you do, especially with two triumphs, is I feel like Gable could dash forward like through this procession of mariners and basically onto the mariner's ship to like cross blades with the guy himself. Like that kind of feels what two triumphs would do, you know?
Is he anywhere close though?
He's out over, he's on the larger ship, like on the water, on the ship where the mast just fell. So
I'm not sure. Ugh, two triumphs though. But that also undoes the good story that we're telling. Like if I keep outrunning Travis, that we're not going to resolve that for
true
a while.
Okay. Then what I think we could do. Yeah. Here's what we're going to do. Okay. So Liz, I want you to describe for me, like there are probably a dozen mariners that are around you, like in this immediate procession. Please tell me how Gable takes them out, what that looks like.
How many did you say? Or did you, a dozen?
Like a dozen. At this point, numbers don't matter. I am going to be taking this. I'm going to be taking the actual numbers out of the collective hit points, but I think like in the story, you're clearly taking out so many more threats.
Now that Tyler's got it into my head, it probably is a combination of magic and melee. That's the only thing that makes sense, even though we didn't roll for magic.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. I think what happens is there is an onslaught of maybe three mariners kind of getting to their feet and getting ready to grapple. And what happens is that with one cut down to the right, Gable puts down their foot. And for some reason, that stomp, that foot stomp has kind of a earthquake effect. And you hear a shing and another shing, and it kind of reverberates. That same strike starts hitting back across the line as if the blade itself was like cutting down and down and down.
Ooh, okay.
Like an echo, like,
yeah,
like an echo cut,
like an
or
echo
something?
Effect, something like
ooh
that.
Yeah. Well, like, ooh, let's, I want to make this even more in our thing. And I like that because you know, that feels very anime. That feels like very Street Fighter, arcade, Sonic Boom, Hadouken.
Yeah.
Let's skyjack it up a little bit. We've described divine magic as, you know, connecting to the pathways and channels of the universe. What if you, with this sword and with the fire of this sword, are simply breaking and disrupting certain pathways in the universe? So like
lighting them on fire?
Yeah. Like when you kill someone with this sword, essentially what you are declaring is there is no future for you. You break the future for them. You burn it away. So like you cut, and like we can see this massive interconnected lines, because you also saw what the Mariners looked like before, and you saw what they looked like with divine eyes. You know they are kind of this weird cluster of interconnected lines. So you strike at the cluster itself and it shatters like glass, and those shards catch fire and burn away into nothingness. And I think it is, it looks similar to the effect that we had before, where like maybe there's a little flash of ghost light, but it's immediately overtaken by the gold flames that are licking on your sword. So like they, like you slash and cut, and maybe it's more than one cut. Like it starts with a single Mariner, and then you move to another and to another until you are able to attack the thing that binds them all at once with a big slash. But I think at that slash, you whirl your sword around and plant it into the ground. And here's my double triumph roll, my pitch. I think the fire from your sword moves across the ground into a massive wall that divides the city from the beach. There is now a wall of flames that separate the procession of Mariners from the beach. And what I'll say, because this is double triumph and no disadvantages, nothing bad at all, I will say, right in front of like you plant this and then like turn with furious eyes right beside you to the person that merely looks like a Mariner, Travis Matigo.
Hey,
like, who is this still here?
Yeah, because you did that cut that killed all the other Mariners, so like, why is this person here?
Travis draws his gun.
What?
Gable draws their sword.
Yeah, Travis, looking at Gable right now, you can see that this is one of those situations where Gable's pupils have like dilated to encompass all of their eyes. Like they are full on in angel mode right now.
Yeah, well, I'm half snake. So.
One,
two,
three,
four.
All right. We did it.
What?
We nailed it. Fuck. Nope. All right. I did it bad.
James, no.
Well, I ruined it. And
James,
I ruined it for no reason.
We didn't even clap.
I'm just
okay?
So eager to be past this. It's fine.
Oh, I feel
James,
you, man.
No.
One.
Done. Sorry. Sorry.
We return once again to the captain's quarters of the Uhuru, which are stuffed to the brim with bags of mail containing letters addressed to the Uhuru and her crew. Dear Spit,
I write today to inquire as to your well-being this season. We missed you at the annual picnic this year and wanted to send our love. The many party games, including the sack race, the pinning of the tails, the slippery obstacle course, and, of course, the pie and hot dog eating contests, were not the same without you there. We hope that you are staying limber. And hope to see you soon again. With love, Big Mama.
Sounds like personal correspondence.
Yeah, spit. This should have been delivered to your P.O. box.
Don't know why.
Well, I mean, it was addressed to the Uhuru crew. The letter itself was personally addressed to me, but it was addressed to the Uhuru crew with the instructions that it be read aloud.
That's fair. I guess my first question is, they had a hot dog eating contest and then a pie eating contest?
Well,
is that what you normally do?
Well, yes, and then there's the combination.
Both at the same time?
Yes.
A hot dog pie?
I don't know that you would call it a hot dog pie.
I'm going to stop this right now. I'm going to stop it. I'm going to press pause, and then I'm going to take the VCR out, and then I'm going to put it in the closet.
The what?
The VCR, the video recording device that I have. We're gonna put this, and we're gonna put it away for like 10 years. Then we're gonna sell it on eBay, and that's what we're gonna do with this particular event.
But I'm so curious. Yeah. It just feels like it's a recipe for just people having a terrible next day. A bad afternoon.
Well, I think that's any that interaction
the next
with
day does
spit
not feel great.
Well, I got it. Do you compete in either one? Do you do both?
Oh yeah, I compete in as many of these contests as humanly possible. Sometimes even beyond that.
Oh wow! Spit. Looks like this video recording got a bid of $1,000 on eBay. Wow, I must sell this right away. Get this out of my life as soon as possible.
On
wow.
What bay?
eBay. Electronic bay.
Ah, I understand now.
Man, anyone else notice that Gable's eyes have rolled in the back of their head and they're just kind of talking and they have a very distant look as though they're speaking and looking into the future?
I feel that way sometimes after the hot dog and pie eating contests.
What is the prize, Spit? Why would you do this to your body?
I see a handheld device that glows with the light of the sun. And on it, I see words written without ink appearing before my eyes, occurring at the same time on another device that my friend is holding
Gable,
in their hand.
Gable.
This is getting dangerously close to cross promotion, and we will have none of that here.
Okay. I'm so sorry. I had it on one of my episodes.
Well, hang on. Before we continue, I'd like to crack open a nice ice cold PBR Easy.
Now that I will approve, because as is canon, that's my favorite beverage. And you know what it goes well with? A big and toasted from Dunkin' Donuts. That's
the
right.
The tips of my fingers are disappearing. Are falling apart.
Oh no. Oh no. Travis, unsay that thing you said.
Well, hang on. Let's get Baritone Barry's cousin Chuck Barry in the room, because I really want him to see what Travis is about to do with this big and toasted and this PBR Easy. He's been looking for a new treat to eat, and I think this is it.
Quick, write him a letter.
I never realized that Baritone was just a first name.
That's that one, for sure.
Because that means Jerkoff is a first name, too. Someone named their child Jerkoff.
First name Jerk, middle name Off.
It's Dash.
Last name Jerry.
Jerkoff.
Yes.
Campaign Skyjacks is a One-Shot Network production. For more information, be sure to follow us on Twitter at CampaignPod for updates about live shows and other events we might be doing.
Welcome to Character Creation Cast, a show where we create and discuss characters, the best part of role-playing games, with guests using their favorite systems. I'm one of your hosts, Ryan Bolter.
And I'm your other host, Amelia Antrim. Join us as we sit down with game designers, podcasters, and fans of games as we dive into learning about different RPGs through the lens of character creation. It's a combination of character building, player advice, game design insights, and even a little bit of fan fiction for a different game every month. We tackle a variety of new and old games, both well-known and indie-produced titles.
We learn how creating characters can tell us a lot about the games themselves. Check us out today anywhere you can get podcasts or on the One Shot Podcast Network at oneshotpodcast.com.
You can find more great gaming shows over at oneshotpodcast.com. Jonnet Kessler was played by Tyler Davis, who can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Tyler A. Dave. Gable was played by Liz Anderson, who can be found on Twitter at Liz_... or on her podcast, Paired. Travis Madigo was played by Johnny O'Mara, who can be found on Twitter at Johnny in Briefs or on his podcast, Dilettante Ball. I am James D'Amato, your host and game master. You can find me on Twitter at OneShotRPG or on my other podcast, One Shot. The original music featured in this production was composed and performed by Arnie Parrott. You can find Arnie on Twitter at ArnePArrott. And you can find more of his work at atptunes.com. This episode was edited by Casey Tony, who can be found on Twitter at CaseyPony, spelled CaseyPony, or on his own podcast, Neoscum. Our logo was designed by Fiona Shea, who can be found on Twitter at FionaPup. The world of Sphere was inspired in part by the music of the Decemberists and the card game Illimat, property of Together Studios. The game used in this production is a modified version of the Genesis role-playing system that was created by a talented group of game designers who were fired by a private equity firm owning Fantasy Flight Games. There are no kings. Take flight, heroes.
Health to the strangers who've ever been kind, and once for our friends ne'er to rise. Twice to the dearest we're leaving behind, who know we can never deny the call of the skies.